Valerie Reyes was more than a headline. She was a daughter, an artist, and a light to those who knew her. Her story reminds us that behind every case is a family, and behind every name is a life.
Introducing The Protectors, inside criminal minds from around the world. Presented by the IAFCI, leaders in safeguarding consumers from fraud and scams for more than 50 years. And now your hosts, International President Mark Solomon and Chairman of the Board Michael Carroll.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Carroll, International Chairman of the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators. I am with Mark Solomon, our International President. Mark, how are you doing today?
Mike, we just got back from Oklahoma City for our international conference, and oh my God, what a great week of training and networking, top notch. And we have to give a huge shout out to the chapter and also our international office that once again made this a very, very successful training. I learned so much, and we got to meet a lot of subject matter experts, and boy, it was great.
Yeah, Mark, we had our international conference here in Chicago, and I know it's a lot of work putting it together, and they did such a great job. Like you said, the training and the education presented there, all the great speakers, the networking events were outstanding, and it was a great conference.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Mike, you bring up a great point that, you know, these conferences just aren't planned in, you know, over 6 months. It's a 2 to 3 year time period where they're working on the international conference, speakers, attendees. So just a great job.
Hey, Mark, can I also give a shout out at the conference? The Monday before, you know, it started, they had the Financial Industry Mail Security Initiative training, all-day training, hosted by the Postal Inspection Service, where I was a longtime member of the Inspection Service, 29 years, and I retired. I'm back back with them as a contractor, and I just want to say kudos to them. It was a great day of training leading into the conference.
Yeah, I agree 110% there, Mike. So to our listeners today, we are going to talk about a homicide that occurred in 2019, and it involves when a red suitcase was found along a highway in Greenwich, Connecticut. It opened the door to a haunting investigation that spanned two states, captured national attention, and changed lives forever. Our next guest tells a story not just of the crime, but of a daughter, a family, and the detectives who wouldn't let her be forgotten. Our guest today is author of The Girl in the Red Suitcase, a gripping true crime book that explores the tragic murder of Valerie Reyes and the tireless work of detectives who brought her killer to justice. We'd like to welcome to the show retired detective Tony Fischella.
Hey guys, hey Mark, Mike.
Hey Tony, thank you for coming on today. This is such a tragic story, and we really appreciate you being here today on with us. But can I just start out by asking you, the book, The Girl in the Red Suitcase, this case was so deeply tragic. What part of Valerie's story did you feel compelled to tell, and why?
Thanks, Mike. This young lady, 24 years old, from Marischal, New York, Valerie Reyes, she was just an amazing, beautiful, talented, loving young lady that got her life snatched away from her. And I just wanted to honor her with writing of this book.
Yeah, Tony, and being your former partner, I remember when you called me about this case, and I know it impacted you, the other investigators, obviously the family. And, you know, what do you hope to convey about Valerie's life beyond her death, and especially in her interactions with her family?
You know, Mark, everything we did, you know, in this case was to help Valerie's family to find her killer quickly. We would not stop until we did figure that out. And I just can't emphasize enough what an amazing young woman this girl Valerie was, and deeply loved by her family. And, you know, there's so many homicides in this country that go unsolved, and that was not going to happen to us.
Yeah. And Tony, for our listeners, I don't know if you could kind of just set the stage of how this investigation started. I mentioned in the opening it dealt with a red suitcase that was abandoned on the side of the road. Can you tell our audience how this investigation began?
Sure, Mark. On the morning of February 5th, 2019, a town of Greenwich road crew was out doing cleanup work alongside of Glenville Road in Greenwich, Connecticut, and they came upon a red suitcase off the side of the road in a small culvert in a wooded area, and they decided to investigate and look in that. You know, these guys, they didn't know what was in it. It was heavy when they tried to pick it up. You know, they thought that it could be anything in there, and much to their astonishment, when they opened it, there was the body of a young lady bound and gagged, folded up inside this red suitcase.
Mm. Oh, God. Hey, Tony, were you assigned the case right away?
Yeah, so pretty much patrol, you know, responded initially, and then the detective division was immediately called out, and I think we were about the third or fourth people on the scene, myself and my lieutenant, and at that point, he assigned me as lead investigator for this case. Mm.
So, Tony, I know, obviously, this suitcase with the body is found inside the body of Valerie Reyes. Did you have any indication who might be responsible? Was she killed there where the suitcase was located? And then, I don't know if you could share also that, was she deceased prior to being placed into that suitcase?
Well, all that stuff would take a little bit to figure out, but initially, in the area where she was, and this was a somewhat, you know, larger red rolling suitcase, there were drag marks off of the side of the road. This was an area, it was a pull-off for vehicles, so we felt that we were dealing with a dump job initially. This young lady, as far as we knew, had no identification on her. We immediately started to try to identify her. She had several tattoos that were visible, and we began to reach out to the local police agencies to see if anybody had missing persons, and start from there. Mm.
Hey, Tony, the Reyes family played such a significant role in the book. What was it like speaking with them and learning about their experience during the investigation?
Oh, my. This family is a very tight-knit family from Nurshell. Her mother, Norma, incredible, strong woman. You know, she had a brother, Sal, who was just about her age as well. And they did everything together. She, when we first identified who we thought it was through, we received a tip and confirmation from Nurshell PD that they were investigating a missing person, 24-year-old female, Valerie Reyes. We got a picture of that missing female. Looked very similar, that it could be Valerie. Again, the way she was bound and gagged, it was difficult to see all of her tattoos. We only had partial tattoos to look at, and her face was covered with duct tape. So it was tough. So we, myself and my partner at the time, Detective Chris Abbasi, we headed over to Nurshell Police Department, met with them, see where they were at with the missing persons case, and began to interview the Reyes family. This was, you know, their family loved her. You know, initially they reported her missing on January 30th of 2019. They felt that she went missing on the 28th to the 29th because of a last phone call that she had made to her mother, which was a very strange twist in this case.
Tony, what did she communicate to her mother?
So on the January 28th, 2019, she had called her mother very late in the evening, about 10 p.m. It was a desperate phone call. She was crying, yelling to her mother over the phone, "Mommy, mommy, help me, help me. I think someone's going to kill me. Someone's after me. I think someone's going to kill me." This is not the first time her mother had heard that. Valerie had suffered from some anxiety, and she had had these episodes before, and her mother was always able to calm her down or have her come over to her house. She begged Valerie to come over that evening to her house, and Valerie's like, "Calm down," and she said, "No, mommy, I'm okay, I'm okay." And that's the last anyone ever heard from her.
Hey, Tony, did she tell her mom any names of people that she thought was going to harm her?
She didn't. She just said she thought someone was going to kill her that evening. She thought she was going to die. She thought someone was after her. When interviewing her family, you know, Valerie was a 24-year-old, young, independent woman. She had a basement apartment underneath her father's apartment in the house that they owned. She was working. She loved to travel. She was very independent. The family did not know a lot of, you know, who she was dating, their full names or information, phone numbers, stuff like that. So she had no known enemies that, you know, her family had said when we interviewed them.
Mm. Tony, what was the first big break that you guys in New Rochelle PD got in this investigation?
So after day two, when we confirmed and identified the deceased girl in the red suitcase as Valerie Reyes through the medical examiner and the autopsy, during the medical exam, we were able to fully see her tattoos. She had a tattoo of Reyes on her arm, several other tattoos. Her family, her brother, Sal, had positively identified her, and that was one of the worst things that I ever had to do. It was terrible, yeah. Terrible. He loved his sister very dearly. And so, you know, during the time that they believed Valerie was missing, they reported her missing January 30th. We found her in the suitcase February 5th of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
During that week, they believed that Valerie was alive in New York City, taking money out of her ATM, her bank account, because they were able to see numerous withdrawals from ATMs beginning in New Rochelle, 5 a.m. on January 29th, 2019, all the way up five other occasions up until February 2nd of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout Midtown, Fifth Avenue, by Shea Stadium, throughout the city. So they felt that she needed cash to go get medical help because she didn't have medical insurance. And okay. That's what they believed.
So, Tony, I assume from this activity, law enforcement began looking at video surveillance of these transactions. Is that what occurred? And what did they find out?
Yes, that's right. Nershell had first come up with that information. They were able to see that someone attempted to withdraw $4,000. It got denied, $3,000 denied, $2,000 denied, and was able to get $1,000. That proceeded over the next few days at Chase Banks of a subject, unknown subject at this time, taking $1,000 at a clip out of her bank account. And in the end, it was over $5,000 that was stolen from her her bank account.
Hey, Tony, I just wanted to ask you, just to follow up what you were mentioning about getting surveillance photos, what other evidence did you discover that was very helpful in your investigation?
Yeah, Mike. So, you know, the banking information was actually key to solving this homicide. We started at the Chase Bank in New Rochelle with the initial withdrawal. We were able to pull the video surveillance images from that bank, which showed a male in dark clothing, not Valerie, on January 29th, withdrawing that $1,000. from there, what we began to do was pull all of the video surveillance surrounding the bank and license plate reader information. We were able to identify a black Honda Accord that the subject was using. We then were able to follow that on a surveillance video where it eventually crossed through a license plate reader and then started heading towards the Bronx. So it was key in identifying the vehicle that the subject was using.
Oh, okay. So you developed a lot of great information regarding, say, financial crimes. Did you have enough at that time to charge this person with murder or homicide?
Yeah, so as the case continued through interviews with Valerie's family and friends, we eventually were able to identify a subject, Javier Da Silva, and we were able to link him to the rental car that he was using from New York City. And that was the same vehicle that passed through that license plate reader. And with that information, we had enough probable cause to prove that Javier Da Silva was the person inside the bank withdrawing those funds, that they did have a past dating relationship. And from that point, we were able to pick him up for interview. And that was on February 11th, 6 days after, you know, her body was initially found inside that red suitcase.
Wow.
Tony, I know you mentioned the financial institutions, and that was kind of the first big break. And yeah, I want to point out to our audience, if you're a financial crime or cyber crime investigator, there's so many crimes that interact with financial transactions, whether it's putting somebody at a particular location and time. I know you reached out, I believe, to Bob Nowakowski from Chase, who is an investigator with Chase, and I've known him for years and have called upon him many a times for his assistance. But how did that really shape and narrow your search down to this individual?
You know, again, the banking information was crucial in able to take him into custody initially. When we did finally take him into custody, bring him back to the Neuchâtel Police Department for an interview after he was Mirandized, we began with the banking information. We, in his wallet, he had the bank card belonging to Valerie Reyes. He, you know, attempted to mislead us initially, said he found it, you know, on the sidewalk in New York City, that he didn't know who Valerie Reyes was. Wow. You know, by that time, we had pulled his social media information. We were able to, you know, show pictures of him and Valerie together. You know, at that point, we made the decision to show him a photograph of the girl in the red suitcase, Valerie Reyes. And with that, he immediately broke down crying and claimed it was an accident that, you know, she had died while he was with her.
And did he go into any detail of what his claim was versus what the evidence really found out?
Yeah, he had said that he went to visit her on January 29th, about late in the evening, and that they were drinking wine, that they, you know, were engaging in romantic relations, and that she had fell and hit her head. Mm. He felt she wasn't breathing. He panicked. So he went outside for a smoke. He says he found a red suitcase outside, came back in. She still wasn't moving, so he decided to tie her up and wrap packing tape from her chin to the top of her nose, because he didn't know what to do and he didn't want her to scream. You know, I wasn't in the interview room. There was a great detective right from Neuchâtel PD there. You know, his nickname was Mariano Rivera because he was just that good. He was that good.
The closer, yeah.
And yeah. I wish, you know, he had said that if, you know, you thought she was dead and you didn't know what to do, why'd you have to you know, taper from her
right.
chin to her top of her nose to prevent her from screaming. He thought she was dead.
Right. And why not, if it was an accident and she fell on her own, why not call 911 and get medics there to treat her injuries? You know, but he made no call, correct?
He did not. There was also, you know, signs of struggle in her apartment. You know, when we did a search over there, there were broken wine glasses. There were things the bed sheets were missing from the bed. We eventually, with Luminol, you know, found a very bloody crime scene, which he had cleaned up or attempted to clean it all up, but we were able to determine that. And also, you know, in the medical exam, she had a large hematoma on the top of her head. She had bruising about the face. She had broken fingernails. This is a girl that fought for her life. And she's not just fall and bump her head and that was it. She was beaten.
Right, right. Horrible.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, you developed a lot of great evidence in this case. And did it ever go to trial or what happened? Did he plea out?
Through the Southern District in New York. He was sentenced eventually to 30 years in prison. And, you know, again, it was, this was a team effort. You know, I had a team of four detectives with me, myself, Chris Labasi, Detective Brian Peruse, Detective Kyle O'Neill, a couple sergeants, Sergeant Shockley, Tommy Kelly. These are all guys Mark worked with. Yeah. You know, these are top caliber guys. And then we had another, you know, five, six other detectives just working any kind of lead. And with Nurshell PD, Westchester County, and in the end, the FBI from Rye came in. And, you know, everyone just wanted justice for this girl.
Right. So, Tony, one of the questions I want to ask here, and again, this is not, he did not admit that this was a motivating factor, but you learned from the family that he had stolen money from her account previously, correct?
So, Javier was a ex-boyfriend of Valerie.
Okay.
They had dated approximately a year prior, and at the end of that relationship, while Valerie was on a trip, she discovered that someone had taken money out of her account. And she had confronted Javier. He admitted that he had taken money out of her account and that he was going to repay her. He never did. This was a sore subject with her, you know, according to her family members and friends, that she wanted that money. And it's my opinion that may be one of the reasons that he gained access to her apartment, you know, that evening. There's no signs of forced entry, anything like that. There were two wine glasses out and eventually broken, but she may have, you know, let him in. That's just unknown, really.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, the girl in the red suitcase, what made you write this book? And I was going to ask you, have you ever written a book in the past prior to this one?
No, I haven't written anything. This is my first try. You know, for me, you know, working this case, it was, you know, I'm in my, you know, 30th year at that time. Worked many cases, you know, before, a couple homicides before. But this was the first one that, you know, I was the lead on such a serious case, a homicide. You know, I had been in supportive roles before in homicides. This was mine. And, you know, I was going to do everything that we could to solve this for this, you know, young lady. This is someone through victimology that, you know, I dived into. Speaking to her family, interviewing her friends, what an amazing, young, talented, independent, hardworking woman this was. And she had dreams. You know, she wanted to travel everywhere. She had went to Alaska a couple months before she had passed away by herself just to see the Northern Lights. This is a girl that wanted to live life to the fullest. And, you know, that was hard. So, you know, I started just kind of penning stuff down, talking in my phone for a little therapy. And it turned into this book. And, you know, my real motivation was just to honor Valerie for the amazing, beautiful, spiritual woman, you know, that she was, an amazing artist. And, you know, even on that note, she helped solve her own case and just wanted to honor her and her family.
Mm. And Tony, you brought up a very important point, and you know, being in law enforcement previously, both of us, like I said, we see some very horrific things in this world. We see pure evil, people doing horrific things, and you know, you're a human being, and I'm a human being. And when you see something like this, that must have been so difficult to go through that. I'm sure it will stay with you for the rest of your life. But was this book part of some therapy for you to kind of get through what you saw in this horrible tragedy?
Mark, it was. You know, it was a way for me to kind of just, you know, work through my emotions on everything. And listen, you know, you were in the business for a long time, and you know that there are certain faces, you know, that just stick in your mind of past cases or victims that you had seen. And Valerie ended up being one of those for me. And, you know, during the case, we had giant pictures of her put up in our detective division, you know, our kind of war room. And, you know, it was just a very tense 6 days. We were working 20-hour days all through the night. You know, some of my guys got sick and we were just going for it. And, but, you know, I go back to just studying those pictures, studying her tattoos and stuff like that. And it does. She's one of the faces that stick in there.
So Tony, I've known you for God, you know, 30 years, and I know you are a humble man. And I truly know that you wrote this book and shared this story, not only with the book, but also worked with TV stations to share Valerie's story. And again, I know Investigative Discovery, I believe A Time to Kill, did a show on this horrific crime. And we also, in mid-August, we know that a second show had done Buried in the Backyard to highlight Valerie and the incredible person that she was. And we'll make those available on the show notes in addition to your book. This is hard. We've seen it a lot of times where investigators go through real difficult times investigating something like this. You start seeing that victim as, you know, the same age as somebody or a family member or a daughter. And the work that you guys did collectively was truly incredible from New Rochelle and Greenwich PD.
Yeah, Mark. I mean, this case was, you know, this was the case of my career, you know. And but again, I've talked to Valerie's mother, you know, probably 50 times, you know, over this and her family. And just, you know, still heartbroken over this. And this is her only daughter. Never get her back. And this guy, for what? You know, $5,000? Terrible.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, Tony, you know, it's tough. You know, cases like these never truly end for the families involved. I mean, but what is Valerie's legacy? And what can listeners do to help support families facing similar tragedies?
You know, it's an amazing story because, you know, when this happened at that time, Valerie's family was devastated. They went through hardships that were very, very tough and, you know, basically ruined them. And, you know, they were able to come back. And I think it's through the love of, their loved one, in this case, Valerie, and that, you know, wanting to find justice for that. I think, in speaking with her mom, I know that for sure. We've talked about that many times, that, you know, she was very grateful that we were able to capture this guy just so quickly. We did it in 6 days. And, you know, she would say that there's so many other parents out there that they don't ever get justice or ever find out, you know, who did it or why they did it. So in her case, Norma's case, you know, she's come back and she's a fighter, and you just got to be a fighter in these things.
Yeah. And Tony, you know, for our listeners out there, these two were in a dating relationship previously. We don't know exactly what his motivation was behind the murder, but we could speculate. But I just want to let our audience know, if there's people out there that are in a violent situation, relationship, or domestic violence, report it, please. Nobody deserves the fate that Valerie sustained in this, and her family. So there are 24-hour hotlines. You could contact law enforcement. Please, we don't want to see another incident like this again.
Hey, Mark, and Tony, too. Can I bring up one thing, Mark? Remember?
Yeah.
Sure you do. Kelly Gow, episodes 40, 41.
Yep.
And you talked about financial crimes. Kelly's mom was missing, and being with the International Association of Financial Crime Investigators and with the inspection service, I got a call on Saturday morning. Same thing, Mark, trying to track mom down by her credit card transactions.
Right.
And
right.
You mentioned earlier how important financial crimes play in these type of cases. And I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, Mike, you bring up a great point. And when you look at these two scenarios, in Laura's case, she went missing. Nobody knew exactly what happened to her. In Tony's case with Valerie, they identified her body, but they used that financial transactions on her accounts to identify the killer, in essence. So it is truly amazing how financial investigators can help in all sorts of areas. I remember assisting Bridgeport, Connecticut PD on a double homicide and researching financial transactions. And, you know, what Tony and those detectives done has really give some finality to the family to know who's responsible for this crime and that he's going to serve a very, very long jail sentence. And but yeah, that is a great point. Hey, Tony, I'd just like to say before we end this podcast, you know, Valerie Reyes was more than a headline. She was a daughter, an artist, and a light to those who knew her. Her story reminds us that behind every case is a family, and behind every name is a life. And like I said, you honor Valerie by the book that you've written and sharing her story on TV. And we thank you for that and helping solve this murder.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. And thank you for sharing Valerie's story. And I hope it helps others.
Yeah, thanks again, Tony, for this powerful conversation. Hey, for our listeners, be sure to check out The Girl in the Red Suitcase wherever you get your books. And as always, subscribe to the IFCI Presents to Protectors podcast and share this episode to help us protect others.
Tony, P.S., on a little note here, I rib Mike all the time about his former partner, so I'm going to give you one chance to share an embarrassing moment about me as your partner for how many years, Tony, were we working together? Jeez.
Probably. I'd say, well, all my 19 in the Bureau, 19 years.
Yep. So. Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing, Tony, is you and I go back to patrol days. I was a brand new rookie cop, and you and Timmy Powell were kind of senior patrol officers, and you guys took me under your wing and kind of taught me the ropes, and I'll never forget that. And, you know, we have such a great friendship. It's truly, you're blessed by the people that you get surrounded by in life, you know, so.
You know, Mark, I love you, man. Shibuti forever, man.
Oh, no. Oh, you're going to make me explain this to the public? All right. All right.
Yeah,
all right, Shibuti. Thank you.
To.
Oh, Tony. Tony. Oh, God. All right. So real quick, I'll make this very short. I was working 7 armed robberies of jewelry stores in 3 different states and worked with the Jamie Lawton, who is an incredible special agent with the FBI, and we developed information on a suspect And I wound up playing football on Thanksgiving morning with a bunch of my neighborhood friends here. And within around 10 minutes, I sprained my ankle pretty bad. So I was in a boot. And but nothing was going to keep me from stop working this case. So I wound up doing a search warrant on the house of one of the suspects who was involved in the armed robbery crew. And the chief found out that I was there in a walking boot. So I got the name Shibuti, and I was told don't ever do a search warrant again and in a boot. So, but I had to be there. So, but thanks, Tony. Thank you. Just, you brought me down around 10 rings right now. So,
that's a great nickname, man.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Well, listen,
hey, Tony, I just heard a comedian a couple of days ago, and it reminded me of Mark. He's, you know, when you guys went out, your department, all the guys went out, and ladies, gets like lunch or something. Was Mark like the circle guy when the bill came around? He looked at it and circled it around again to see if somebody else would pay it. Was he that kind of guy? You know, left his wallet in the car.
I got to tell you this, and you guys should remember this when you go out to dinner with Mark. Most of the time I go out with him, he grabs the check and takes care of it. He's that kind of guy.
I got to take care of my partner. Carol, you pay your own way, Carol. I'm not paying for you. All right. So, well, folks, in all seriousness, this was truly a heart-wrenching episode to hear a life taken away from us too short. But it's also a story of dedicated detectives, family members that never gave up hope to find who did this and to get justice for Valerie's murder. So, again, we thank you for tuning in. And, Mike, where can people go if they wish to listen to the Protectors podcast?
Well, I like to go to Spotify. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we're there. We love to have you sign up. Join the Protectors. We need as many Protectors as we can out there. And,
absolutely.
You know, Tony is one, too. And, Tony, thank you for everything that you do throughout your career. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, my brother. All right, folks. And listen, if you're looking to contact us, we have a new email address linked directly with the IFCI. So if you want to be on the show, maybe you're a subject matter expert, maybe you're a victim of a crime, or you have a story to tell, we're here for you. Send us an email, and the email address is protectorspodcasts@iafci.org. All right, Mike, well, I think it's time for us to sign off once again, and we got to get our favorite producer, Doug Taylor, to join in. All right, so, hey, I'm Mark Solomon, International President. I'm signing off from the great state of Connecticut.
I'm Doug Taylor, Executive Producer in Philadelphia. I'm signing off from Philly.
And this is Mike Carroll from Chicago. We'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember, as you join the fight to protect our citizens, you're not alone. With more than 6,500 members from around the world, the men and women of the IAFCI are standing together with you. To learn more or to join the IAFCI, please visit our website at www.iafci.org. The Protectors podcast is produced by Modified Media and is available for free wherever you listen to podcasts. The hosts and guests' opinions are their own and do not reflect those of management, employers, or sponsors. Listeners are encouraged to contact law enforcement if they suspect being a victim of a crime.